Hello, ladies, gentlemen, and others, and welcome to Werewolf the Podcast. This is your werewolf, Will. We're currently doing lots of episodes, and I think we're on 142? Yes, 142. And you will have to go back and listen to some of the episodes if you want to keep up with this werewolf, orgy-tastic, horrific, nightmare, gory, horror, comedy soap opera that I've been told I've got. Yeah, really great. Anyway, in the description there are loads of links to loads of things. Go check them out because that really helps out the podcast. If you wouldn't mind, if you could go to Spotify or the platform of your choice and review us and tell them what you think about us, that would be great. And it only takes a couple of seconds to press that thingy and do the what's it. Come and join us at all the social media. All the links are down below. The Facebook site is just brilliant. So it's quite weird talking to lots of strange people about werewolves, but I really enjoy it. So without further ado, we're having a night out with the werewolf and the professor. What hit me? Something's died in my mouth. What happened? Who ran me over? Am I dead again? Am I back in hell? Cause this is shit. Hangovers. I don't do hangovers. I don't do memory losses of nights. Yeah, so, okay, it's time to sober up. I was in a bed. I didn't open my eyes, but yeah, definitely a bed. Face down. The pillow was a bit damp from the saliva that had run from my mouth as I slept in, and a sort of alcoholic haze, I suppose. I was nicely snuggled in between two warm bodies. It was cosy, and Oh, they smell good. The smell of post-sex was in the air. Fen was close, and that comforted me. My mouth was dry from a night of drooling. The headache was already clearing as my body quickly processed the remaining poisons from my system. I lifted my head, reached up and scruffed my hair with my hands, moving them to my eyes as I rubbed the crust of last night's sleep from them. My hard drive of my mind was slowly restarting. Everything seemed to be, let's say, satisfactory. Rolling over carefully between the two protesting sleepers, I faced the ceiling, folding my arms behind my head and stared at the blank cream surface. I was trying to place where I was. I was trying to place when I was, Zoe, and just what had happened. The waft of a body odoured armpit assailed my nostril for a moment, but I smiled as I looked to either side of me. It seemed that the smell had been a worthy result of some hard work. Again, I stared up, a fascinated smile crossing my features. Now, what the fuck had happened? Me and Simon had gone out. Shit, yeah, that was it. Simon and I had gone out and partied, and whoa, what a night it had been. He knew what partying was. We'd wandered out of the mortuary into the arms of several well-armed police and some terrified detectives. He had felt me tense and knew that I was on the edge of wolfing out and killing half of Manchester police population. To stop this from happening, Simon had firmly passed his car key to me while he pushed the button up the key to like open the car. He nodded towards it, allowing me to see the flash of the indicators at its opening. This was his way of telling me to go get in it without verbally, you know, telling me to go in and go get in it. He smiled as I understood the command. He then turned to the important, very ranty folk. I got the idea that he would need to sort some shit out before he could continue with this evening's festivities. I wandered over to the car in a sort of newborn daze. Yeah, you need to go back and listen to the episodes. People just ignored me, and I don't like being ignored normally, but in this circumstance it was perfect. The police had been cordoning off the area, and guns and anxiety and fear filled the air as usual. And, to be honest, as usual, this completely fed my ego. I watched as helicopters flew in, army personnel were being brought in. It was really exciting. It made me feel good because the reason for all this was, again, me! The panic that was being created was at the thought that at any point, I would be coming out of that building and they would need to be able to deal with a big fuck-off werewolf. It was tempting, just tempting to give them the beast to see what they could do about it. The great wolf soul walking next to me paused and gave me a look that in our world was his expression of the, well, I suppose it's the hard no. As I passed two very heavily armed police folk, I sort of giggled. They looked at me in a somewhat concerned manner as I, you know, felt shifty and broke eye contact and continued my journey to the, well, it was a little shitty white Fiesta. This could be his car, no fucking way. It was the first time, really, I'd been disappointed with Simon. I opened the door and got into the passenger side of, right. This wasn't what it pretended to be, this was a fucking race car. I plopped into an ADVSC bucket seat, which was harnessed, and checked out the roll bars and the lack of stuff in the car. Lack of stuff in the car meant it was lightweight. The tinted windows had hidden the reality of what was not a car. It's a spaceship. The driver's side had a highly personalised Momo steering wheel and a long gear stick into a sort of short shift box. It was a sign that whoever drove this was, well, not only an experienced racer, but probably a really good one. No way. This was, like, proper exciting. Simon was a boy, right? Well, boy racer? Nah, this was no boy racer setup. I mean, this thing looked sort of internally like it could have done real rally stages. Oh, life just got so much fucking more fun. As usual, Fenn was moaning, though, as the back had nothing in it. Why he complains about these things? I don't have any ideas. I mean, he's not even physical as an entity, so it's not like he could touch anything to get even comfortable, was it? I laughed in the warm bed right now at the memory, and the person to my left grumbled and wiggled before going still again. I waited for her to go quiet before I resumed my search of my memories, and then wiggling down carefully between the two of them a little to get a little more comfort, I started to remember more. Simon eventually got back to the car, and as he got in, he threw the suitcase in the back and sat down, exhaling a great sigh of relief.
Well, they somehow bought that spurious nonsense,
he told me before pushing the start button and letting the small beast of an engine burst into an over-revved burning life. We were surrounded by cars, vans, and all the accoutrements of the Manchester Uniform Services. I looked around to see how on earth he was going to extricate his car from amongst all the others. And then he looked at me with a bold intention, and I caught his eye.
Not being patronising here, old man, but you may want to tighten that harness a little. This is going to be rather invigorating.
He laughed as he slammed the stick in reverse and accelerated backwards up. Well, fucking warp speed, slowly turning to face and look out the back window before Jay turning the car and bursting through the police tape as the confounded officers watched him now accelerate, jinking around stationary vehicles at a speed that made even my teeth itch with adrenaline. I was tense and held my breath. I held the seat even tighter as the digital dial touched 93 miles per hour on the central city street.
Sorry about the rush, Will, but I need a drink.
I think he was apologising for the manner of our quick escape. He didn't need to apologise for anything. This was fucking awesome. Back in the bedroom. God, I needed a drink. I slowly sat up, trying not to cause any disruption to the sleepers. It's not that I didn't want to bother them, it's just couldn't be asked by waking them up. Oh, there was another one on the left. Three. No wonder I was a little tired this morning. Looking around the room, I thought, hotel? Yeah. Hotel, high-endish. On the side table were the remnants of the night before, wrappers, lube, and drugs of many forms, jewellery, empty bottles, glasses. The floor was covered in clothing, and two more partially naked women, I think, were snuggled up on one of the couches that were in the suite of this unknown place. I looked for something to drink, but the glasses and mess had, well, nothing. The champagne bottle by the bed was disappointingly empty on shaking it. There was nothing right now I would entertain by, you know, putting it in my mouth. I carefully shimmied my butt down the groove between the two sleepers and stepped off the bottom of the enormous bed. I turned and considered the now uncovered knight's companions. Beautiful. Most people have, you know, sort of a after-party regret, the horror of the mess, the anxiety of the awkward conversations in the morning where you discuss the mundanity of things like breakfast after doing the audacious and the downright degrading hours earlier with someone who was called... What's your name again? I smiled. This morning was going to be entertaining too. The girl on the left reached for the cover I'd removed from her and I replaced it, and she snuggled into it in a relief. And I laughed.
Fucking hell, that was a night, said Fen as I stood before him in all my glory, stretching and yawning whilst raising my hands to the ceiling. You were proper wasted, he laughed.
I nodded and smiled at the wolf.
I regret nothing
yet, I told the wolf.
Oh, you bloody will, he replied.
I smiled and wandered to find the bathroom, scratching the right cheek of my ass to find a glass of six of water. I was sitting on the loo for a sit-down wee. I deserved it. Whilst I filled the glass on the sink with water and sipped it several times as more of the night came back. We'd travelled in the car for a while and we'd not really said that much. We went from city to countryscape in the darkness. The professor drove at hyperspeed but in complete control. It was intense and we both enjoyed it. So many close calls and sketchy moments kept me wide awake. Where are we going? I asked the man, now slamming down the gears.
We are going to Phaeton,
he shouted over the engine roar.
Are you familiar?
I'd never heard of it, but the wolf voice in my head punctuated the idea with a grumpy snort. No, I told him, I've never heard of it.
Ah, well, you're in for a treat then. Let's say this place is sort of on what some would say are the boundaries of the worlds. Only the magically, blessed can be entertained there. It's the place where the poet finds the muse. The great writer gets the spark of a premise, and the weird and wonderful get to be weird and wonderful without judgment.
As I smiled, I saw a terrified bus driver slamming his brakes as we cut him off at a tricky corner and hit a roundabout at a speed that should have had us upside down, ploughing a furrow through the field of cows to our left. Coming off the same roundabout, a Range Rover jinked, slamming on its brakes so hard that the hazard lights came on as we floated past millimetres away from it, grazing its bodywork. Simon laughed out loud as he wrestled the steering wheel back under some level of control.
That was a close thing.
What? He said through his slightly bared teeth. After another 10 minutes of madness, the light of dawn was raising its head above the hills in the distance as we flew directly towards it on the horizon. The pink light brightened the day and it made it difficult to see. Simon brought a pair of mirrored aviators, of course, out of somewhere and placed them on.
Just a couple of minutes, Will,
he reassured me. As we roared down a long straight road, a large stone arch in an apparent Gothic style appeared in the distance. The sun shone through it like a beacon, and he accelerated to what I can only say was insane fast on such a single track road. If anything had been coming the other way, God help me.
Hold on,
he said.
This can often be a little bit bumpy,
he continued, before bursting through the arch into a dark courtyard where he slammed on the brakes and the car slew sideways over a gravel surface before stopping in a momentary wave of spat stone before killing the engine and letting the vehicle recover its poise on its modded suspension. It was now tranquil as the engine cooled, ticking like a metal beast, you know, as it does as it shrinks back after becoming superheated. The man undid his harness and turned to me. He was waving an arm towards the view from the windscreen.
Welcome to the fabled Phaeton, he said.
Then reaching a finger forward, he tapped the boost gauge and looked disappointed for a moment. He looked at me.
Did the manifold sound off to you?
He asked seriously. I looked at him in a state of a lack of knowing anything about that. He looked back at the boost gauge, tapping it.
Yes. Yes, I think so too,
he said to himself. After standing and flushing the toilet, I turned to the shower. I started the water flowing, letting it run for a while as I checked myself over in the hotel mirror. It was floor to ceiling, and yes, of course I enjoyed the view. As you know, I'm a narcissist, so the pitch revealed only pleased me. I did look a little more beastly, but in a beastly good way. As I entered the shower, I tried to think about what had happened after we had arrived in Phaeton. Well, in this case, landed in Phaeton. When we'd landed, yeah, you heard that right, landed, we'd been in a courtyard that had been unlit. Yeah, you heard that right too, courtyard. And there'd been no signs of anyone or anything else. The professor smiled as he got ready to climb out of the car, and he checked himself in the rearview mirror and asked if I was ready. I opened my door in response. The courtyard was not empty, it was full of people? I didn't get out of the car. I sat right back down and closed the door to look out the car's window again. The courtyard through the passenger window was now dark and empty. I cracked the door open once more and peeked through the crack. I heard the music and the laughter and saw the light and saw the denizens of the place wandering around. Simon had now finished his self-perusal and again smiled at my confusion.
If it's of any comfort, old chap, I have no idea why that happens either. What I will say is this place is not right. If you try to understand it, you'll probably go loopy. I'd suggest that if you can, you just suspend your ideas of what reality pertains to be and just go with it. I can promise that if you do, you'll have an experience that will be, at worst, unequivocal to any other. Now I need a drink. They have some of the finest vintages of red in the cellar here, and Bosworth knows his malts.
He looked at his watch.
Oh, and karaoke begins in 10 minutes. That's a stroke of luck.
Back to the shower, which was now rushing over my body, and washed the impurities of the night away. We must have been in a very posh place, as the provided toiletries were bottled in a very high quality, although I must admit that the running theme of peach scent was not a particular favourite of mine. It was fresh, and I'm sure I'd feel better for it. Oh yeah, where was I? Oh, in a courtyard. Karaoke? As I stepped from the car, I felt the warmth of the summer night and the smells of cherry and apple blossom in the air. We were in the courtyard of a vast castle. I mean, like, huge. This was like Hogwarts on steroids. The professor was outside the car now and waiting for me to join him. The population of the courtyard was, well, all shapes and sizes and constructions. I would go into detail, but God, let your mind do some of the filling in. Think traditional fairy folk of lore from all around the world and transport them to the courtyard of Hogwarts. That's why we have films, isn't it? And that's basically what we saw. There were, oh, let's give you an example, 3 minotaurs in what looked like BDSM gear drinking from massive ale horns. I think they were doing something that is named as quaffing in the fantasy books. I think quaffing is simple. They seem to pour as much of the contents of the container down their respective chins as they pour in their mouth. I was staring. Why wouldn't I? And they were chatting in what sounded like a complex language, but it, you know what, it definitely had a lot of moo in it. I looked around again. There was a group of little guys bimbling past with red hats on, and no, they were girls and guys holding hands. They were about 3 inches high and blonde and handsome in fine green and white clothes. They waved as they noticed Simon, and he greeted them in a language I'd never heard. A brief conversation was held with one of the little things. Much pointing and directing was going on from the little man. Simon nodded his head and motioned me to follow.
Gnomes,
he said.
Nice people in general. Not the friendliest after a drink or two, though,
he told me. I nodded as though I knew this in a sort of understanding way. Didn't have a clue.
Now, the bar,
he said, glancing around the courtyard and nodding and sharing nods and smiles with various things.
Come on.
He turned on his heel and wandered off towards a large open door with lots of light, lots of noise, and lots of things flooding in and out of it into the night and out of the night. Good memories. I was now back in the bathroom as I thought about this and towelled myself dry with the fluffiest and nicest towel I had ever met. You probably think I've got something for towels, but don't you think a good quality towel is a wonderful thing? I even took a mental note of the label attached. When I get to rebuild my home, hopefully, these will be the towels of choice, I think. There was a sound of movement back from the bedroom. The people, well, obviously were waking up. I could feel their brains switching back on and trying to determine what had happened and whether they'd, you know, had a good time. Following Simon towards the open door, I was lost in all the sights and sounds of this spot. A centaur was in the corner taking a horse piss. I mean, it's fucking impressive. Gallons of urine were being pumped out of the half-horse, half-man as he rested his arms against the wall to take his weight. He was really pissed. Jesus, how much alcohol must it take to get a fucking centaur drunk? Having taken my focus elsewhere as I walked, I did not notice the individual I bumped into until it was too late. The individual was just a filled black cloak that hid whatever was underneath from the world. My body weight had knocked it back a couple of feet, and although, you know, I couldn't tell anything about it because it was covered in darkness, I couldn't see any of its features or its body language. I couldn't see any of that, but God, I could sense the anger that I'd caused.
"This is going to be amusing," said Fenny Muskell.
The professor was a few paces ahead and turned and noticed the standoff.
"Who the fuck do you think you are?" asked the cloak.
"Do you know who I am?"
it asked. I didn't have a clue. Obviously no one could see what was under the cloak, so how would I know? Now, both Fen and I were laughing at this response. Whatever it was, I just kind of decided to die. The night was getting better, and this would be a fun distraction and the start of some good old-fashioned violence and aggression. I felt that this would release some of the tension that had built up in my body over the past while. From out of nowhere, Simon was now standing next to me and holding a placating hand in front of him and directing it towards the figure.
"He meant nothing by that. He's new here. Can we just leave this issue as it stands, gentlemen?"
I looked at Simon in disbelief.
"What? What?
No, you've got this wrong. I'm going to rip his head off and shit down his neck," I told Simon. He winced, closed his eyes momentarily, and then shook his head.
"For goodness sake, will you please be quiet? We don't need this,"
he said to me through his clenched teeth. This made me realise that this was maybe, could be, would be, should be, a very serious situation. Because Simon knew what I was capable of. Well, he knew what I was, primarily, you know, a werewolf. So whatever was in the cloak must have been something even more badderer, terrifying.
"Look, old pal,"
said Simon to the cloak. He was actually raising his hands in submission. I couldn't believe it. What was going on?
"You know me, and I know you. My other friend here has had a lot to drink, and he doesn't know what he's saying, okay?"
he told the figure whilst looking at me with a look of warning.
"No, what? No, I haven't. What the fuck?"
I started, but was literally shushed by the look from Simon's, well, pleading eyes.
"Shut the fuck up," added Fen.
Now this was definitely not a warning worth ignoring, so I shut the fuck up and tried to look as though I felt a little remorse. There was a few awkward moments as it seemed the cloak was considering its options. Time ticked on, and then hands reached up to lift the cowl from its head. The creature was... the thing below the hood was...
"You're fucking Noel Edmonds,"
I said laughingly. The person stared.
"You know, you, Noel Edmonds. You know, the diminutive family celebrity. The guy off the telly in the 1980s. Mr. Blobby, the Funhouse, Swap Shop, and all that stuff."
Simon was now holding his head literally in his hands. I had obviously fucked up. Have you got a problem with that? Noel Edmonds asked me. No! No, man, you were... I used to love you. You were brilliant. Honestly, I did. I loved you. You know, you flew helicopters and all that, and you made dreams come true. You know, fucking Swap Shop was brilliant, and you're a veritable hero of my youth, and you're one of those veritable heroes that hasn't turned out to be a pedo yet, I genuinely told him. I saw little purple lightning bolts in Noel's eyes orbits. His face, although physically unchanged, was now fucking terrifying, even to me in this moment. I sensed the power of this being as he flexed his magical powers. Simon stepped in front of me. He was, now I realise, bravely using his body as a shield between Noel and myself.
Look, I know you and I that... we get on okay, don't we?
He told the Norm. He then pointed at me, and then himself.
We don't want any trouble. My compatriot here is a little foolish and a little stupid. May I offer my deepest regrets for his rudeness and request that we just leave this particular regret-filled incident as done. Please.
Wow. Noel's eyes were now filled with miasmic flashes of energy. His form expanded and grew. The cloak, it flew up into gargantuan wings as his body enlarged to fill the courtyard. Heat and light boiled off the creature's ember-crusted skin. Its head became bull-like, but flames leapt from gigantic black horns that sprouted from that bovine skull. The skull was peppered with multiple eyes, and they were black and slit-like. Dark smoke rose from them into the night. I stood gobsmacked, to be honest. The stench of death and sulfur assailed my nose. It was... Ah, fuck, said Fenimore. Then it was gone. The monster had shrunk back into the diminutive man. He raised his hood again and turned and just stalked off into the night. The sense of relief was palpable. The monsters and the things of the courtyard that I hadn't noticed now relaxed and returned to their night's work. Simon turned towards me.
Now you listen to me, young man, and you listen good. How can I put this place in terms you may grasp?
I could see him think.
This place is full of almost infinite power. Yes, that's how you'd understand it. And some things here are so powerful, they make him...
I point you to the sky.
Him up there. They make him nervous.
He paused and calmed himself.
So, may I request that you behave like a gentleman this evening? I wish to have a good time, get drunk, share a night with another much like me. I don't want a night fighting the horrors of the world.
I mean, he'd been really kind to me and stuff, so... I was properly admonished and hung my head a little. Of course, Fen found this funny. Simon set off against the door. This time I followed as though I was a scolded child. In this case, I felt a little as though I was. I have to be honest, Simon had annoyed me a little. This had been noted, but Fen had also been on my case, and I knew that I really should listen. As I caught up with him, I wanted to speak, try to get us back on an even keel with one another. That was Noel Edmonds, the TV presenter, I told Simon.
Yes, it was. He is a gourmand. They feed on the energy of humans. They soak it up and thrive in people's emotions. Positive emotions make them stronger. That's why they do so well as celebrities in the human world.
He didn't look that scary. Well, not until he turned into the big fucking giant glowy beastie thing with wings. Simon nodded, shook his head, and now at the door, turned to me with a face of resignation.
Thing is, Will, You may have been killed and come back, but the thing you faced tonight could have killed you with a thought.
He paused again, trying to think of an explanation.
No, not killed. It's worse than that. He would destroy you. Destroy you totally. Body and, soul. The whole shebang. Even your semi-immortal self needs energy. And he could have emptied your, you know, battery with just a glance.
I smiled and nodded my understanding while inside not really understanding. Simon's eyes that then had lost the hardness.
Look, you just have to be a bit more careful and respectful here. You're now somewhere where you're not so special. You're just one of them. You're lucky that you met Noel, actually.
He patted me on the shoulder and tried to turn towards the door. I stopped him gently. Lucky? I asked. He turned back to me, looking left and right to see if anyone was close enough to listen.
If that had been Christopher Biggins, there would have been no more werewolves. He would have removed your entire kind from the world. He's a bit of a bastard, to be honest. I mean, Noel's okay. He can't handle his brimstone.
He smiled with a wink.
Beautiful voice, though. His karaoke version of Barry Manilow's Mandy is just wonderful.
A girl brought me out of my reminiscence as she knocked on the bathroom door. I'd foolishly left it open. She wore a dark, lacy slip. Her makeup had been smeared by the night and her eyes were half closed as she held her tummy. She paused for a moment, giving me an uncomfortable smile and pointed at the toilet. I nodded as I turned my back to the mirror, putting the towel around my midriff. It was not out of feeling shy at the girl's presence, but it just felt a little bit more appropriate. I heard her sigh as she let go of the full bladder and the tinkle of water was added to the burgeoning sounds of the people coming back to life in the next room. In the mirror, I could see the girl leaning forward as she weed, holding her forehead in her hands and yawning.
That was one hell of a night. Thank you, she said.
I nodded.
What happened to Simon?
She asked. I considered this.
What had happened to Simon?
My mind wandered back to last night as I considered this, and we'd entered the bar. It was... Oh, God, how on earth do I describe this bar? It was... Okay, I'm going to give it a go. It was what you would imagine as a medieval drinking den. Rushes lined the floor. The furniture was a strange mix of rude, rough-cut wood structures, and they went through to elegant pieces of dark, polished beauty. The walls, well, they were festooned with brightly coloured tapestries showing the, well, I suppose the fairy folk of all kinds in their respective world, or worlds as I now kind of knew. It was a large place, a pall of smoke hid the ceiling. Obviously, this place ignored the no smoking in public spaces health policy, as you could see pipes, cigarettes, and other smoking devices were being used all over the room. Were the beings in here actually the public, though? So maybe it didn't count. I don't know. It didn't smell foul, though. It didn't have the cloying, harsh cigarette stench. It was pleasant, even to my stupidly refined senses. There were two lit, substantial fireplaces at each end of the room, and the bar ran down the whole length of it. It was tended by the most stunningly beautiful creatures I had ever seen, and to be honest, I'd seen Lucifer, and I'd seen, you know, the Vampire Queen, but this was... They were completely androgynous in nature, but emitting... No, not... I don't know, not emitting a glamour, but emitting... I don't know, like a beauty and a sense of, a sense they were actually lovely. Twas seemed an appropriate word. Twas fucking weird and it did me head in a bit. Now the place was packed with all sorts and although well lit, the people in there were those types that did not want to, let's say, stand out from the crowd, although they all did. They were all standing out from the crowd, really. They looked like the aliens of the cantina scene in Star Wars combined with the creatures of the Dark Crystal. If you've ever played D&D, then... Hey, don't judge me. It's a fun game. God, what are you like? Then, if you'd ever played D&D, then this would be the part where the over-exuberance of the Games Master would really help. However, getting the fucker to stop describing the things in here may be difficult. Next to one of the fires was a stage, and on the stage were two hags singing some song, actually. very well. It was weird, but the modern karaoke machine and the giant TVs that gave you the words of the songs were actually the most bizarre things in the room. They were so out of place.
Now, Will, Fen,
he spoke to us both.
It's time to have one hell of a night.
We squeezed our way to the bar and one of the beautiful people floated over and greeted Simon with a small kiss on the lips and a wink.
Ah, Fliss, yes. This is my friend Will.
The girl looked at me. Her blink was two winks. Her left eye followed quickly by the right. It was enthralling. She then looked at the wolf soul and nodded again.
Have you got anything special in the way of whiskey?
He asked. She nodded and raised a hand to the sky. A bottle flew from the top shelf to her raised hand. Two cold tumbler glasses appeared on the bar with a flash, and she placed a small porcelain jug next to them of what I assumed was water? I don't know. Simon turned the label of the bottle for our perusal. It wasn't really a bottle, it was like a black decanter looking thing. There was no label. It was beautiful to look at. The excitement was evident on Simon's face. He was slightly enthralled, and not by the beautiful girl. He momentarily met that girl's eyes, and I could see him just mentally thank her.
Ah, the Glenturret, 50-year-old.
His face was passive but smiling.
Well, old boy, this is a worthy evening for a sip. I've never had this before.
He nodded at the girl in agreement. Agreement at the bottle offered, and she removed the stopper. He stopped her with his hand briefly.
Can I afford this?
He asked her. She winked, shook her head in a no, and then pointed at herself and poured two large shots, leaving the bottle before leaning over the bar to whisper something into Simon's ear. He laughed and went a little red in the cheeks as she brushed his face with a finger before turning away from us and slinking away. We both watched her walk away. It was a shared moment, and it was well worth it. I looked at the glass on the bar. He looked at his with love. We both reached forward and grasped them before chinking them together and taking a grateful sip. God, it was good. The hot liquid cleansed the throat. It was the smoothest spirit I'd ever drunk. It was bliss. For a moment, we paused as we considered the liquid in the glasses. In silence, we both offered gratitude for the night. Naturally, our eyes met and nods of approval were offered.
Right. I've not actually had a night off for some few decades now. So may I request a forestalling of all hostilities for the evening? If they have to resume tomorrow, that's fine. But tonight, we make merry and celebrate life.
I raise my glass to the toast.
Ladies and gentlemen, gnomes and germs, can you make your way to the bar, please, and put your name down for the karaoke? The slots are going fast.
Ooh, what's your song?
I laughed and took another drink and shook my head. I don't do karaoke, I told him. He simply leaned his back against the bar, sweeping his arms expressively over the crowd.
Well, tonight, Will, you most certainly do. Come on!
Mm-hmm.